This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, the president says we must stay the course and another attack on a U.S. embassy. Joining us today via phone, E.R. Shipp. She's a professor of journalism at Hofstra University. And also with us from member station WBEZ in Chicago, Laura Washington, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, and Roland Martin of the Chicago Defender. And E.R., we thank you, one of our participants today, as you are a regular on another day, got sick and you've come in to save us, so we appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what we heard from the president in prime time last night. Let me play a quick clip from the speech, and then we'll get into it.
Osama bin Laden and other terrorists are still in hiding. Our message to them is clear. No matter how long it takes, America will find you, and we will bring you to justice.
All right, E.R., we heard the utterances of Osama bin Laden. We've been hearing that over the course of the last few weeks. Yet many will say that's a name that has not been uttered much over the course of the last 2 or 3 years. Clearly, this is something that the White House is invoking and wanting people to hear again.
He's the boogeyman, and we have an election coming up pretty soon. The president did a disservice to the country, I think, in his address. It was kind of a bait and switch. The whole idea of his going on national television was to commemorate, to recognize, to remember what happened 5 years ago, to comfort those who lost loved ones. And after about 2 minutes, he went into his political mode, the same speech he's essentially been giving around the country for the last couple of weeks or so. Bin Laden is the boogeyman. Remember that if you vote Democratic, you're voting for Bin Laden, is kind of the way it came across. And he missed an opportunity to realize that it's more than Democrats or liberals or whoever he may think as his political enemies. More than that are concerned about or remembering and reflecting upon what happened 5 years ago, but are concerned about in various serious ways what's happening in Iraq now, and questioning on both sides of the aisle whether the strategy that the Bush administration is pursuing is a wise one. So Bush did us no great favors.
Let's take
Americans
a quick listen.
Who wanted to think about yesterday as a sacred moment.
Let's take a quick listen to another portion of the speech.
If we yield Iraq to men like bin Laden, our enemies will be emboldened. They will gain a new safe haven. They will use Iraq's resources to fuel their extremist movement. We will not allow this to happen. America will stay in the fight. Iraq will be a free nation and a strong ally in the war on terror.
In spite of what E.R. said, Roland Martin, the president would want you to know that he sees all of this as inextricably tied and that you can't separate it.
Primarily because that is part of the strategy, and that is what took place after September 11, 2001, where they immediately tried to link Saddam Hussein and Iraq to the 9/11 attacks. And so even when Vice President Dick Cheney was on Meet the Press on Sunday, he did the exact same thing. I think what we also have to understand is cause and effect. His comments about bin Laden and Iraq were related to bin Laden making the statements about Iraq being the Third World War. Well, why did bin Laden make those comments? Because we invaded Iraq. And so we cannot overlook the reality that our actions as the United States has precipitated some of these things as well. President Bush talks about enemies flying into Iraq to aid the insurgents. Those same individuals were kept out of Iraq when Saddam Hussein was in charge because he was trying to maintain his control. And so I think it is somewhat disingenuous to assume that, well, all of a sudden they are flooding into Iraq because we're there. That's why they're there, because we invaded the country. That is why.
Laura Washington, what I found most interesting is that the president talked about the possibility of weapons of mass destruction yet again, the idea that if we don't clamp down and hold this down, that these terrorist states, these rogue nations would in fact be, to use E.R.'s term, the boogeyman to our children and look down the road and have them in possession of weapons of mass destruction.
Well, there's such hypocrisy. While he talks about weapons of mass destruction and the threat of weapons of mass destruction, We never found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. In this same speech, he acknowledges that Saddam was never connected to a clear threat against us. But yet, because of Saddam, because of Iraq, we have to be on guard for every other potential terrorist out there. And talk about bin Laden being a boogeyman. Unfortunately, he, I think, in many ways his heroic status has been underlined by our actions in the Middle East. It's created new terrorists, some of the folks that are going into Iraq that are making it so difficult for us to get out of Iraq. I think the most disconcerting or saddening thing about the events of the last couple of days is, you know, September 11th started our supposed war on terror, and I don't think that there's any end of the war on terror in sight, and it's because of some of the things that I just mentioned. We don't understand the enemy. We can't even identify the enemy. New enemies are being born and bred every moment because of our actions, and we don't have any strategy to combat them.
You know, Ed, but the question is, do we not understand our enemy, or are we unwilling to admit the reality that our foreign policy over the last half century has contributed to that? I mean, you look at Iran. Iran was, as Steven Zinsser lays out in his book, Overthrow, Iran was a country that was on a democratic track. We chose to overthrow the leader, Mossadegh, because he wanted to nationalize their oil interests of a company that is now called BP. And so you had individuals who grew up with that in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, and it came to fruition with the overthrow of the embassy. You can't say, why do they hate us, if you don't want to examine what our foreign policy has been like over the last 50 years. That is a direct result of this anti-imperialistic view that people have. You can't deny that, but like to.
ER, if you take the language that the president used last night, one has to believe they're not going to see those mistakes, if you will. This is a quote. Whatever mistakes have been made in Iraq, the worst mistake would be to think that if we pull out, the terrorists would leave us alone, end quote. The idea that there's an acknowledgement and a non-acknowledgement of mistakes.
Of course, and he's putting together two things that ought to be separated. There are mistakes that have been made militarily and politically that focus on Iraq right now. And then there are mistakes that have been made in terms of fighting the war against terror. The two things are not the same. And I think the president was counting on us having our attention deficit disorder working so that we don't understand what he was saying, that we only hear that he is John Wayne going in to protect the United States against these bad men terrorists, without listening to the fact that he's probably targeted the wrong place at the wrong time if he really wanted to carry on an effective war against terror. There is a need to fight this war against terror, but
Absolutely.
He and his administration have not done so effectively.
Here's what we see, Laura, Washington across the world. We saw on Tuesday an attack on the U.S. embassy in Damascus. It is said to be believed that this is not al-Qaeda, that this is, if you will, a ragtag group of Islamic militants, described
that mean,
by
I
many.
Have to have
I said
somebody
so,
in here. What does
so,
that mean? We don't
I just
know
said,
the
you didn't let me finish. You didn't let me finish, ER. And I said, so described by the press is what I was going to say, because that is how the U.S. press often characterizes these people. So the point is, we see attacks on the embassy immediately following this speech, which one must believe is a direct thumb in the nose to this president.
Well, they know we're vulnerable. They know we're politically vulnerable, and they know we're militarily vulnerable. And it gets back to what ER said about we're fighting the wrong war in the wrong place. We can't fight it on every front, and that to me is another disconcerting thing. We're going to continue to have these kinds of responses. You can call it ragtag if you want, but I hate to see if they really get serious. They're killing people, and they're going directly to our embassies. It may not be on American soil, but Americans should not take comfort in that, because they are definitely sending us a message, and it's not a pleasant one.
ER, the one thing that the note there is, if in fact this group is not affiliated with al-Qaeda in a true sense, one has to see the continued growth among splintered groups, which says that the ideology is growing, or at least the want to show up the United States.
Well, that's the key thing here. And that was kind of unleashed with the invasion of Iraq And it caught even our most senior intelligence figures off guard. They were focused, some of them, at least for many years, were focused on bin Laden, but somehow bin Laden didn't reach the surface for many, many, many years, even though there have been many warnings. He had had much time and much money from the U.S., by the way, from his work in Afghanistan against the Russians. They had had many opportunities to start passing along the basic message that they have, that they want to essentially destroy the West as we know it. They want to spread Islam as they interpret it. And their message is getting out. As farther along we go into our war on terror, they're seeing it as a war to destroy Islam in the rest of the world. As far as we get along in this whole thing, this conflagration, there are more people who are going to come out and say that they agree that they have to save their religion, they have to save their civilization, etc. So they may not even know who bin Laden is, really. They might even know, not even know exactly what this fight is about, but they somehow have heard that they've got to save their way of being, their way of seeing the world, their way of believing. And that's what we're up against. So you don't have to call it Al-Qaeda. You don't have to call it anything. It's people taking it upon themselves to save what they see as their civilization and their religion.
Roland Martin, five years later, critics will suggest save what we heard from Colin Powell before he left the administration, the idea of if you break it, you buy it, and needing to deal with this section of the world in different ways and trying new avenues of diplomacy. What we're seeing from this administration is, in many people's minds, the same old song, the draw the line in the sand and damn it, it's our way or the highway.
Well, absolutely. Here's the thing that I think as maybe Americans listening can understand this here. When September 11th, 2001 took place, there was a widespread nationalism in America. Nationalism means, I don't care why they did it, what happened, they attacked us. Even if you may have been against American foreign policy, nationalism caused you to have a like reaction. Why do we assume you don't have nationalism in other countries? Why do we assume that when you attack Iraq, somebody say, yeah, I may have been against Saddam Hussein, I may have been against his level of torture, but I'm also against you coming into my country, so therefore the nationalism then unites the folks in that nation. The exact same thing happens. What we have never liked historically is America has never liked another country having a view of nationalism. And so when they decide to take that view, then we say, as you suggested, Ed, in your question, that we say, hey, our way or the highway, and we don't care about your degree of nationalism. That is what you're seeing. You're seeing individuals in countries say, look, we may have been against those guys, but for you to attack our country, then we are now, in essence, on the same side. We saw it in Afghanistan, guerrillas, tribes fighting one another. When the Russians came in, they said, we're going to hold up fighting each other because then we're not going to fight the common enemy, Russia. Nationalism led to that, and then when they kicked Russia out, they went back to tribal warfare, the exact same thing. We are creating individuals aligning themselves by virtue of our foreign policy, and unless we own up to it and admit it and accept it, then we're not going
What's
to get
answer,
out of
though,
this mess.
What's the answer, though, Roland? Do we go through international bodies such as the United Nations? Do we find ways to have multinational responses so it's not just the United States, my way or highway? What do we
well,
do?
Yes, you should go through those efforts, but also you do have a responsibility that if you can determine who attacked you, and then look, I had no problem with the strikes in Afghanistan. In terms of if you're saying that where they originated from, those terror camps, but when you begin to add other people to the equation, let's go into Iraq, let's go here, and let's somehow link everybody back to 911, that's when you get into trouble because you're on shaky ground.
Laura, let me ask you this. As people are in the election mode, if you will, today, some of the voting held here in New York and elsewhere across the country, one has to question whether or not, whether it be a Democrat or Republican, the man or woman who sits in the office after this administration will have to deal with this quagmire, particularly if we believe the rhetoric that we heard from the president last night. It doesn't look like there's going to be any pullout anytime soon. How difficult does it make the situation with an incoming new administration, a Republican or Democrat?
I think it makes it terribly difficult. And it's, I think the important thing is for the new incoming administration not to make too many promises or not to say we're going out now, because the world's going to be watching. Mm-hmm. And there are so many uncontrollable elements to this. And I want to get back to another thing that we need to remember, and maybe this is going to have to fall to the next administration, and that's what Roland brought up earlier about, you know, our history of imperialism. Kinzer's book pointed out this doesn't just go back to recent history in Iraq and Iran. This goes back over 100 years,
that's right,
back to our overthrow of Hawaii.
Yes.
100 years ago. We have this history. We have it's almost an American genetic makeup to feel like we have – it's either our way or the highway. We have the right to come in and tell countries, dictate to countries how they should run their governments. And until we come to grips with that and understand that history and learn from it, we're going to continue to repeat these mistakes.
Well, you know what, Laura? I have to slightly disagree with you on – Mm-hmm. The difficulty of a new administration coming in. I think, depending upon who it is, who is elected in 2008, that person can maybe sort of start afresh in the sense of saying he or she is open-minded. Depending upon the people he or she picks, those people may be able to have better relations diplomatically with those people that we're now not able to talk to effectively, not able to deal with effectively. I think it could actually be an easier way to get ourselves out of this quagmire, as you put it.
But that takes time.
New person coming in.
That takes a lot of time.
That one.
That really takes a lot of time, because you are getting up to speed. And again,
no, but the people who are running are not people who are out of the loop.
That takes a lot of time, and something we don't have, unfortunately, right now, gang. I'm sorry, but we're up against the clock. Thank you so much, ER, for coming through for us. And Roland Martin and Laura Washington, thank you.
Thanks,
Ed.